Hello and welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale, private label soaps, cosmetics, mineral makeup, and consulting to help you grow your beauty business. Find out more today at EssentialWholesale.com. Well, it's Valentine's Day, the day of love, and for many of you, that includes celebrating not only vital human relationships, but also vital business relationships. Solid, positive relationships are the platform for growth in any business, so I encourage you to choose wisely and cultivate relationships with people who can help you grow and achieve in your business. And you know, not only is it important to establish relationships with people you know, but in a way, it's also important to establish relationships with people you don't know. And the best way to do that is through learning materials and resources successful business owners use to share their experiences and advice. And today, we've got a fantastic resource for you and the author of a wonderful book that I guarantee will help you and inspire you to achieve beyond your wildest dreams in your business. Today's guest is Robert Jordan. He is the author of How They Did It, Billion Dollar Insights from the Heart of America. Robert Jordan has been launching and growing companies and helping other entrepreneurs do the same for the past 20 years. His first company, Online Access, put him on Inc. Magazine's Inc. 500 list of the fastest growing companies. He also works with businesses all over the country to help them achieve and be successful and have a positive impact on their communities, their customers, and the world. And Bob is here to tell us about all of the insights and tips that he has learned from interviewing these successful people that are in this fantastic book. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
You know, this book is packed with information, and I just want to tell our listeners that the format of it is really interesting. It's not like any other business book I've ever seen. So can we start just by giving us an idea about what it is about this book that adds something to the conversation? There are so many business books out there today. Tell me what this one brings to the table that's new.
Well, thanks, Don, and just starting with the format, because it is different. We had to get two books into one. Originally, this started just as a book of quotes, advice and inspiration from these champion company founders, 45 individuals who created $41 billion in value from scratch. So originally it was a book of quotes and, you know, something you could read in one sitting. What happened was that the interviews proved to be so interesting, fascinating, and inspiring that we had to build in a second book. So what you have are two books in one, and it's designed in a different kind of way, so you can kind of read them both at the same time.
Okay, well, it is a really easy read, and I love how it's set up in a Q&A format, which makes it really easy for you to kind of skim through and find questions that are relevant to you right now. So I encourage you guys to check this book out. Of course, you can get it on Amazon, and we'll be sharing some other resources for it later on in the show. So, Robert, tell me a little bit about how you chose the entrepreneurs and the successful people that you interviewed for this book. Was there a set of criteria that you used?
Yes, we started with some pretty rigid criteria. A founder had to launch, grow, and sell a company for $100 million or more, or go public for $300 million or more. That's a pretty high hurdle. I broke my own rules a little bit with some of the people, but that was basically it. And we were really only looking in hard categories like technology and innovation. And nothing against more traditional businesses, but we really wanted to find things. And in particular, Don, as you know, we were looking, you know, the Rust Belt, the Midwest here. And we wanted to see how we could kind of beat this perception that you can't do technology in the heart of America, which is not true. You can.
Well, clearly, you found enough entrepreneurs to put that myth to bed. Amazing, the success that you just described. Was there a time frame? Did they have to do it within a certain time frame?
No, they have to be alive. It wasn't, it wasn't historical. It wasn't something like where we were looking at, you know, great founders from 100 years ago. These are individuals, most of whom went on to form more companies beyond their first success.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was just a common mission here to share with the next generation of up-and-coming entrepreneurs. And I know a lot of your listeners have businesses. And, you know, the point here was to be able to have these, allow these founders to speak directly to people who want and need the inspiration. This is not a book where, like, I'm drawing conclusions from them. It's literally all in their own words. It's their quotes. I'm tossing out the questions, and then it's all them answering.
And, you know, Robert, a lot of people sort of believe that if they don't have a business in technology, that a book like this, which features advice, tips, and insights from people who have built businesses in the technology sector, they might put the book down and say, you know, this is really not going to be relevant for me. I'm totally not building a business in technology. But you found different, because a lot of the tips and insights that were shared here really run the gamut and are necessary insights for any small business.
I think so. I think you're right, Don. And I have to say, just because, you know, it's the word technology does not mean that it's all rocket science. Matter of fact, I would say that of the 45, there are only one or two examples where, yes, it's true, you had to have a PhD, otherwise you couldn't figure it out. I mean, there are examples in there, for example, like Jim Dolan, who is the founder and CEO of the Dolan Company, which is public. And at one point, he bought a legal newspaper. He bought the publisher of a legal newspaper, a publishing company that was over 100 years old. Now, most of us would look at that and say, all right, what are you going to do with that? That doesn't exactly sound like a growth industry. And he figured out how to turn that business on its head. He created a product that no one else had seen. It was sitting there kind of in plain sight. And he ended up with a real-time online service that came to be valued at more than $100 million.
Wow.
Just
and
from
it's
buying
great.
A legal publisher.
I felt like I was sitting in a room talking to these people, or they were talking to me as I sort of absorbed the things that they were sharing. Robert, what are some of the major themes that you were able to extrapolate from your interviews with these people? I noticed that there are, you know, a variety of different topics are discussed, from finances to human resources and everything in between. What are some of the themes that you saw from these unrelated people that they shared with you about how they achieved in their businesses?
Donna, the first conclusion I came to, and this is really only after doing the book, this is going to sound obvious, but they all took a leap. And this really hit home for me in a different way when one of the founders, Bill DeVille, he started a company called Health Personnel Options. And what he said is, he said, most of us avoid failing, and that's not a way to succeed, or at least not a way to succeed in a big way. And I thought about that, and he's right. And for each one of the founders, you can point to this first decision that they made where they had to take a leap. And afterwards, it may seem like, oh, gee, it was no big deal. But at the time, it was something that, you know, for you or I, we would say, okay, that was a big thing. You know, for example, one of the founders, Vince Pettinelli, he had a great job. He was in a very secure position, 35 years old, and he quit. He quit his job to go start a company. And that's the kind of thing that it really hit home for me. You have to take a leap.
So, and Robert, you're really talking about not just a leap of faith, but for these people, especially, for example, Vince Pettinelli, a leap of finances.
Completely. To go into his example a little bit, Donna, Vince was the commissioner of mental health programs for the state of Ohio. He was appointed by the legislature. The governor loved him. I mean, that's the definition of security. He probably didn't have to look for a job again the rest of his life. 35 years old, a wife, a young son, a baby, and he told his wife he wanted to quit his job and open up a home for severely mentally retarded individuals, one home for 10 individuals. Now, if you heard that, you wouldn't exactly think, gee, now this is a way to make millions of dollars, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His company, PeopleServe, ended up with 7,800 residents, 9,000 employees, and it sold to a company called ResCare for $200 million.
And how long did he own it, do you remember?
that was he. None of these. One lesson from these 45 founders: none of this is overnight success. He owned PeopleServe for over 20 years.
Good.
Of it's overnight. But it's a great example because in the beginning you'd look at it and you'd say, how could he have taken that kind of risk?
Well, in hindsight, it's really easy to say that, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
But so this is good. So you have got to be able to assess what your options are. And when you talked with people about taking those risks, Robert, what did you find out? What sorts of things did they consider? I mean, obviously, finances, can we pay our bills? But you just mentioned, for example, in Vince Patinelli's case, he had a wife and a baby and could have worked forever for the state of Ohio.
Right. I'm just remembering as we're talking here an example with another founder, Bonnie Baskin. She was a single mom, two young sons. She had a job at a university. She had gotten a PhD. And she wanted to try starting her own company and a real startup. I mean, she had this wacky idea of starting up a mobile testing lab for viruses, and she was going to drive a van around and go off to these facilities and test. And I just thought, well, now that's initiative there.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. She eventually ended up founding two companies, one's called ViroMed and the other one's called Aptech Labs. And she sold both of them, again, after a lot of years of work, but that was also for a little more than $200 million between the two companies.
So you have to take a risk, you have to take a leap, as you say, on the front end. What sorts of themes did you see develop from people who maybe had been 3 or 4 years into it? Because, you know, the honeymoon ends after a little while.
Right.
And at some point you kind of wake up and you go, ugh, UGH, all caps.
Well, never mind even honeymoon. The experience, you know, you could say on the one hand that we were self-selecting for success. I mean, to get interviewed in this book, a person had to hit $100 million, and that's not easy.
No.
The funny thing is that they all hit the wall. They all had examples of challenges that in some cases were massive. From what I can tell, they struck out a whole lot more than most business people do. Even at the launch, I mean, for example, Rock Mackey, he founded a company called Tomotherapy, which is public, and this was for MRI technology, and they had this great partner, a Fortune 50 company, and right at the point of launching the company, the partner backed out, completely backed out, and he had to fire the entire team. Every employee had to get laid off. Try that at the launch. So it's not. It really wasn't a question of that they were not hit with challenges. They were hit with a lot of challenges.
So tell me this in his case. I'm not really asking exactly what he did, but what did you see in his story? What was it inside of him that propelled him to go forward when what you just described to me would make most people say, you know, I'll go back to that secure job?
Right. I'll tell you another conclusion I came to, not just because of that example, but because of the others, but there's a different way that these folks look in the mirror. And I don't know that it's unique to them. I think we can all do this. But when they hit the wall, they didn't look at that as, I'm a bad person, I've been defeated, I better quit. And you look at the failure rate of businesses, and I think a lot of us, a lot of times, that is what we do. We take it very personally, and we go home. Mm-hmm. And what happened with this crowd is that over time, they tended to look at the strikeouts as simply being experiments that didn't work. One of the other founders, Scott Jones, Scott's essentially the inventor of voicemail as we know it. There's a lot of companies that he succeeded at. But he had this great quote in the book. He said, we like to fail fast. We try to fail fast.
Okay.
I thought that was wonderful. And he didn't mean, you know, you scrap entire companies. He meant that everything about what you do, designing the product, the marketing plan, the tactics, everything, you have to go as quickly as you can to figure out what doesn't work and then what does work.
So let me ask this. In failing fast, that's trying something new, doing it as quickly as possible so you can get to either success, right, or moving on to something that will be successful if you free up your time when you do that. What did you perceive was some of the things that they thought of as they got to the point where they knew they were approaching failure. For example, they tried something, they put everything into it, they wanted to see if it would work. At some point, you go, you know what, I don't think this is going to work. At some point, you have to pull the plug. What are some of the insights that you gathered about when to pull that plug? And this could be for an entire company, right? Or it could be for just one line of products that you offer.
Well, I think if I can back up there, the lesson from all of these founders is you're not putting all your eggs into one basket. And that, even in one company, can mean one particular approach. I mean, a number of the founders had a lot to say about this, that this idea that you're going to come out with the perfect product and kind of deliver it to the world, it doesn't work. It's probably one of the biggest mistakes that rookie entrepreneurs make, is to try to design the perfect product or the perfect marketing strategy or tactical approach. And for most of them, I think they would think that, you know, you just missed the opportunity if that's the way you're going to do it. It was a little bit different. The way Dick Costolo put it was interesting. He's now the CEO of Twitter. Before he moved to Twitter, Dick was a multiple, you know, home run hitter as an entrepreneur. And he said it was a little like an eye doctor exam. You know, you go to the eye doctor and they put those lenses in front of your eyes and they say, okay, is A better than B or is B better than C? And he meant that that's the way that they would test everything they did.
Okay, now this is very interesting, and I'm picturing myself in the doctor's office taking those tests, because that really brings home a really unique sort of a word picture of how we can look at this. So you're saying don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
And when you're trying out different things, you've got to kind of see which one, for lack of a better way to describe this, looks better, more clearer, has more clarity, which one are customers responding better to, so that you can look at the ones that are more fuzzy and excise them from the process?
Yes. But you could look at some really simple examples that I think would relate to a lot of businesses right now, Donna. For example, you know, Facebook has this brilliant automated system for advertising. So literally you can design an ad on Facebook in 5 minutes.
Yes.
And the tools are so complete that if the ad isn't working, you can kill it within a minute.
Yeah.
You don't have to keep going with something that doesn't work. And for that matter, you want to try out 50 different ads. You can try out 50 different ads to see what works.
Mm-hmm.
There are those kind of tools, I think, all over now.
Okay. So, and this is really important, too, Robert, from this perspective. A lot of our listeners are really passionate about their businesses. They started these businesses from a passion. They want to make money, but they really do enjoy what they're doing. So, and one of the things I find is that we sometimes spend so much time making each and every individual product perfect, completely perfect, before we focus on marketing that and allowing some of the marketing to help us perfect the product or make it better as we go forward.
Right. You're getting at one of the most critical things, which is what you're implying there, to go for the perfect product and then and only then market it is a recipe for failure in just about any industry you can name now. Maybe not the car, you know, business, where the car has to be able to run pretty well before it gets on the road, but just about anything else, most of these founders would say that their customers helped perfect the product.
That's a really good point. And what you're talking about failing, it's a recipe for not only failing, but failing really slowly, right?
Exactly.
It's a bad thing.
Yeah, no, and it's just that definition of failing is more in the line of, you know, mm-hmm. Thomas Edison, 3,000 or however many tries it was for the light bulb. If the 3,000th, you know, try didn't work, he wasn't going to give up. He would just go to 3,001.
Right. Robert,
by the way, you're touching on something really interesting about passion.
Mm-hmm.
If we can talk about that for a minute, because
please.
It's really clear from these founders that passion trumps skill. Skill was either something that they hired or they acquired, but the passion is more important.
Passion trumps skill. I like that. As long as it doesn't overtake sort of the common sense approach to growing the business.
Yeah, actually the full expression I got out of this, what I've now decided is that need comes first. Then comes passion, and passion trumps skill. And what I mean by that is that these founders, they're incredibly curious about the world, and they discovered something that maybe the rest of us overlooked. And that kind of thinking, which is there's a problem or I can do something better, that fueled passion, and that passion's what drove them to start a company or to start a product.
And so what you mean by need comes first is need for your product or service in the marketplace by your target customer.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Very good. Robert, what are some tips that you gathered or just some ideas, experiences that you heard from some of these successful entrepreneurs in terms of successfully integrating business and family?
Business and family is a tough one. I have to tell you that while the book doesn't mostly focus on that, occasionally I ask the founders about balance in their lives, and it's tough. You know, these are people who are mostly driven to succeed, and I don't know that there was a winning formula in terms of how they all did achieve balance.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I did notice that it wasn't in the book, but you know what I thought to myself? I said, this Robert Jordan interviewed all of these people for hours. You spent hours upon hours upon hours doing this, and I know this topic must have come up in some of these conversations. So I'd love to be a fly on the wall. Is it just sort of it is what it is, and there will be no balance until I get to the point where I want this business to be? What sorts of themes did you see, if any, in this regard?
Well, Donna, this may not be answering your question, but I'm going to tell you. It took 4 years, start to finish, to do this because, you know, these founders didn't have to do it.
Right.
In most cases, they're very they're just none of these people were seeking the limelight. They weren't seeking publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the common theme, the mission here was, you know, pass on inspiration and advice to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, in some cases, I backed off from some questions about their personal lives.
Okay.
Not only because I wanted to get the book done, but frankly because you saw things like, you know, divorces, or I'd read in the paper about divorces, and it's like, well, I can see this is not all, you know, it's not as if everything was a bed of roses every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, and I do think that just by, well, first of all, thank you for taking the time to pull this information out of the people that you interviewed, because the fact that they weren't seeking the limelight is one of the things that I think makes their answer so fantastic and so cut to the chase. I mean, they just let you have it. Here's the answer. It's two sentences, and it hits the nail right on the head. And thank you also for sharing that, you know, it's not easy. I think a lot of startup businesses, particularly women, don't know what they're getting into if they also have small children or they want to have a family. They don't really know, even just to make a basic profit, not the millions that we're talking about here. It takes a tremendous amount of effort and some would say sacrifice when it comes to maintaining not just close family relationships, but your friends as well.
It is sacrifice. And if I can touch on one piece of advice in particular for people starting out on their own. You know, in a way, I'm guilty with this book of it kind of celebrates these individuals. You know, they're these people who are founders and they had to stay with these companies. And yet success is never a solo act.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that these founders became incredibly successful is because they developed partnerships. They developed great management teams. You can't get to big success as a solo act. You can't do it.
Right.
And what I see with a lot of friends of mine and colleagues who, you know, they may be in solo practice for whatever they do, is it tends to be they have to do everything. And they have to do everything all day long. And that can lead to burnout and boredom and everything like that. And so the more possibility for someone to have a partner, to be able to develop a team, you've got a much better chance of succeeding.
Great advice there. What advice, speaking of that, did they share for leading people, creating a team? What are some of their best leadership strategies, or what did you notice about them as leaders that you feel help them to be really good at that? Because that's a challenge as well.
Yeah, it's a great question, and we focused a lot on this, and some of it was funny. Howard Tolman, for example, the founder of Tribeca Flashpoint, well, he started dozens of companies, and he said, we entrepreneurs should never do the hiring. He said, we're so in love with our companies and our ideas. You get this job candidate in the room, and the entrepreneur starts talking, doesn't finish until it's over. And if the candidate is a really good listener, then they're going to get the job. They've never said anything, and you have no idea if it's a fit. And I thought that was funny. But, you know, in terms of practical advice, a couple of the founders talked about actually taking courses and being better at hiring and managing. And I thought that was kind of a nice sign of humility that it is something you have to work at. One of the founders, Mahendra Vora, he said, I'm most concerned about training the five managers I have because those five will then train the next 25, and those 25 will train 125. That's an interesting way of looking at growing a business.
Very, very insightful there. And, you know, it's interesting in this economy, too, because today there are a lot more job candidates than there traditionally are. And so not only do we have to be concerned generally, as you say, about being good at hiring and learning wherever we can, but we also have to be even more discerning because there are so many more candidates, generally speaking, to choose from.
Yes.
What sorts of, you talked earlier about the mindset. Just in our last minute or two here, Robert, what would you say comes through to you as one defining characteristic of people who have achieved the kind of success that the people in your book have enjoyed?
I'd say, Donna, that for your listeners, it's get ready for Plan B. Because you can be fueled with passion, you know exactly what you're going to do, you're going to take on the world, you have a great idea, and you should do it. You need to be in action and go with exactly what you want to do. It just happens that in most cases that what's really going to be successful is something you did not originally anticipate. It's going to come somewhat out of the first idea. It's something that the marketplace and your customers and your experience is going to make much more successful. At least that was the experience with these founders. Plan B was usually the thing that made their fortunes, not the first plan.
So flexibility?
Flexibility, it's this interesting combination. You have to be stubborn to see your idea and your vision go into the world, but at the same point you have to be flexible enough and willing to listen and work with a team so that you know how to hit that home run.
Very interesting. Very interesting. We have to remember that to work toward Plan B. And it's interesting that you say that, too, because my business today is 11 years old. It looks nothing like the business I started when I quit my job to start a business several years ago. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. So, you know, it's fun to be able to do that, but it also means that you have to be adaptable, right? You can't be rigid. You've got to be flexible.
Right. But some of these examples were dramatic. You know, one Bill Merchants, he set up a software company, and it had a disaster in the software, and they created disaster management software, and that's what became the home run.
Okay. All right. So he was in tune to that and ready for that.
He was ready, and that's what the market really wanted.
Very good. Very good. So, Robert, tell us where we can go to follow you on Twitter, get on Facebook. Where are the best places to connect with you online?
Well, thank you. We have a page on Facebook. We have a lot of fans. We'd love to have your listeners engage with us. And on Facebook, it's How They Did It book. And we have a website, of course, howtheydiditbook.com. And the conversation continues there. We continue to interview entrepreneurs there and put out quotes from the book there. And the conversation just keeps going on.
Very good. Thank you so much. Make sure you go to howtheydiditbook.com and also on Facebook, go to How They Did It to get more insights and information from Robert Jordan and this fantastic book, which is, again, entitled How They Did It, Billion Dollar Insights from the Heart of America. And, of course, you can purchase it on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us on today's Indie Business Podcast. I look forward to seeing you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.